Hello and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Davis Hovey. On this week's recap, commercial fishing has reopened near the Kodiak Archipelago's largest salmon hatchery after a fishing boat spilled over 3,000 gallons of diesel in the area earlier this month.
The fuel that did get inside Inarkatoy Bay did not ultimately threaten our broodstock or our infrastructure in any way.
More about that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at KodiakHealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
A 30-year-old Kodiak man was found dead Sunday afternoon, September 14th, after reportedly falling off a cliff. According to Alaska State Troopers, Andrew James Pillins was camping on Long Island, roughly 5 miles northeast of the city of Kodiak, with a group of people. They reported him missing around 7:45 p.m. Saturday. Troopers initially searched on the ground with drones, which turned up empty. The Coast Guard also searched unsuccessfully by air Saturday evening. On Sunday afternoon, Kodiak Island Search and Rescue located Pillins below a cliff on the south side of Long Island. A spokesperson for Troopers said via email that it's likely he fell approximately 100 feet to a rocky shoreline. Foul play is not suspected. Troopers say the investigation is ongoing. Pillins is survived by his ex-wife and family of four kids, as well as his siblings, Devin Hansen and Richard A. Pillins III of Kodiak, among other family members. Hansen requested in a post on social media that people respect the family's privacy in this time of mourning. Any new assisted living facilities and homes built within the Kodiak Island Borough need at least 3 off-street parking spaces and can be located in nearly any zoning district. That's after the Borough Assembly approved changes for local assisted living facilities last month. Mian Danner is the program manager at the Sunrise Assisted Living Facility, one of 10 assisted living homes or facilities in Kodiak. She says parking can be a challenge for residents, visitors, and employees.
Sometimes when we come into work, some of the tenants here park their car, like park their vehicle, even if we have the sign up, like it says nursing staff only, like reserved for nursing staff.
Danner says that Sunrise can have up to 15 residents, but only has 5 parking spaces available specifically for them, although not every resident has a vehicle. Sunrise and the other existing facilities are grandfathered into the new regulations, according to Chris French, the community development director, but new assisted living homes and facilities must have at least 3 off-street parking spaces. The parking requirement scales up with staff size and the number of residents. Prior to the changes, where assisted living facilities or homes could be used was not listed within borough code at all, leaving its uses very ambiguous. The main distinction between an assisted living home and an assisted living facility in local regulations is in scale. Homes can have up to 5 residents. Facilities can have 6 or more. Sunrise has the most beds out of all the assisted living options locally and is the only one that is located in a business zone. All the other assisted living homes or assisted living facilities are located in residential districts, according to borough records. Borough Manager Amy Williams said during the August 21st Borough Assembly meeting that the zoning change allows assisted living facilities to be located in nearly all districts.
Assisted living facilities would be allowed in the multifamily residential district, business district, and urban neighborhood commercial districts, as well as retail business districts. Conditional use permits would allow assisted living facilities to be in the rural residential 1 district, single family residential district, and 2 family residential district.
The updated assisting living facility and home changes went into effect immediately, with all the existing ones grandfathered in after the Borough Assembly unanimously approved them during the August 21st meeting. In other news, Alaska is home to 16 national wildlife refuges, and their programs have been hampered by Trump administration staffing cuts in the last 8 months. At the refuge in Kodiak, unpaid volunteers are temporarily stepping in to keep its visitor center from shuttering during the last hurrah of the island's cruise ship season. KMXT reports.
Poppy Benson is the vice president for outreach of Friends of Alaska National Wildlife Refuges. This nonprofit, volunteer-run organization supports all of the refuges in the state through small grants, volunteering, and advocacy.
One of the things is we are dealing with Murkowski's office.
As in Alaska senior U.S. Senator Republican Lisa Murkowski.
We're sending her letters. We've had meetings with her to just explain how understaffed the refuges are and how bad these budget cuts are.
So bad that Benson and a couple other volunteers from the nonprofit paid their own way to come to Kodiak this week. For the next 2 weeks, they'll staff the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center without pay. Benson says she and others from the Friends of Alaska National Wildlife Refuges have also been asked to volunteer at the Tetlin National Wildlife Refuge outside of Tok. Benson says without volunteers, the current staff at the refuge in Kodiak wouldn't be able to keep the visitor center open during this busier part of the island's cruise ship season. 6 more ships are scheduled to call by the end of the month, bringing up to 6,000 passengers.
They're trying to keep it together with some events, but the outreach staff is now 2 people where it had been 4, and they don't have the interns they had. They don't have the seasonals. They couldn't hire any of the seasonals this year that they had in the past, which was as many as 4. So the staff for doing public events has just been cut in half.
Currently, the Kodiak Refuge has 8 staff members, with 1 being a uniquely shared position between the regional Native Corporation Koniag and the refuge. Before this year, the local refuge had 14 staff, including a bird biologist, a fisheries biologist, and a pilot. Similar scenarios are playing out in other refuges across the state. In Yukon Flats, the 3rd largest wildlife refuge in the country with over 11 million acres of land, there is no longer a manager or a deputy manager on staff. The maintenance mechanic at the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge near Cold Bay in the Aleutians was cut earlier this year, leaving just 3 staff at that refuge and a federal wildlife officer based out of King Salmon. According to Benson, only 6 of the state's 16 refuges currently have managers. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service oversees the National Wildlife Refuges. The service declined an interview request for this story. In an email, a spokesperson said the service remains dedicated to its conservation mission, but it has a policy not to discuss personnel matters, despite collaborating with Koniag and the Friends of the Refuges group for staffing at the Kodiak Refuge. Benson says these staffing changes are mainly due to federal budget cuts and the turmoil after the White House's Department of Government Efficiency started canceling federal contracts and forcing out employees at the beginning of the year.
The Fish and Wildlife Service refuge system in the state has lost 37 employees since the start of the administration, and they only had 220 to begin with.
On top of the recent staffing changes, the federal funding for National Wildlife Refuges has been declining or flat since fiscal year 2015. That's according to data from Congress's Nonpartisan Research Service. The Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center will be open on cruise ship days from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. through the end of this month. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
The latest icebreaker to join the Coast Guard fleet, the Cutter Storis, is coming to Kodiak this weekend. Officers will also be offering public tours on board the Storis on Saturday, September 20th, from 9 to 11 a.m. The 360-foot ship is homeported in Juneau and is the first icebreaker to join the fleet in 25 years, bringing the Coast Guard's total to 3 icebreakers. Formerly called the Ivic, the Inupiaq word for walrus, the boat was built in 2011 in Louisiana as a tugboat for Shell, the British oil and gas company. It was then bought by the Coast Guard in 2024 for $125 million, refitted and officially commissioned this summer. Storis has had some issues in the past, as reported in a ProPublica investigation in January, which pointed out design issues. The Coast Guard described the purchase as a bridging strategy in their report as it continues to seek to build its own icebreakers. The newly acquired boat will join the Healy in the Arctic. The Polar Star, the fleet's sole heavy icebreaker, largely operates near Antarctica. Kodiak's Shunack tribe announced earlier this month that it was awarded more than $2 million for mariculture processing at its current seafood plant. As KMXT's Brian Venwell reports, it's a big investment to diversify the small plant's capabilities.
Dozens of workers walk along Kodiak's Cannery Row, a waterfront edge of town lined with seafood processing facilities. One of the workers is Chris Sanito, who manages Kodiak Island Wild Source. It's a small plant compared to the neighboring ones owned by big processing companies like Pacific Seafood or Silver Bay Seafoods, but it's still part of some of Kodiak's biggest fisheries.
We participate in cod fisheries, halibut processing, salmon when we can get it.
The plant, owned by the Shunack tribe of Kodiak, runs year-round and usually works with commercial and sport fishermen. About 5 years ago, the facility added kelp to its processing lineup.
We've blanched it, we've dried it, we've ground it, acid stabilized it, you know, so different forms every year.
The poundage varies widely, from as little as 40,000 pounds processed last year to a few 100,000 pounds of kelp a few years ago, according to Sanito. And now WildSource is about to get an upgrade for its kelp processing capabilities. Earlier this month, it was awarded a $2.3 million grant from the Southeast Conference, an economic development organization. That money comes from a $49 million federal grant awarded back in 2022 to invest in the state's mariculture industry. Sanito says it's a big deal.
It's geared to up our output significantly, and we'll be able to diversify the products that we make.
Some new products include biopolymers, which are a sort of biodegradable plastic, as well as cosmetics or processed kelp to mix with soil for agriculture. Sanito says it could also be a game changer for the types of equipment the plant will eventually house.
We'll have unloading equipment, choppers, grinders, agitation tanks, centrifuges so we can spin off different components, dryers so we can dry different parts of it.
He says the investment hopefully will create a better market for Kodiak's five current kelp growers and diversify the plant's capabilities.
This is a big chance for us, and we're at the crossroads for our company, and it's a huge decision for us to take land that we have, that we were thinking of growing into fish processing with, but we're going to go for the mariculture processing and see what we can do with that.
And mariculture isn't the only change coming to WildSource, though. Across the street from the plant, the tribe is finishing construction on a new building for WildSource's offices, as well as a retail space and a seafood cafe.
We're going to have a commercial kitchen in here, and we'll have different light offerings, but, you know, seafood-themed bagels and lox and just kind of easy walk-up type dishes, maybe some hot fish sandwiches or something.
He says the building will likely open early next year. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Vanois.
Kodiak's pink salmon harvest is at its third largest ever this year, with only a week or so left in the season. As KMXT's Brian Vanois reports, it's the only region in the state with a higher harvest for the species compared to the last odd year season.
Kodiak's pink salmon harvest is up by about 36% compared to the 2023 season, according to the most recent data from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. So far, over 33 million fish have been caught around the archipelago. Odd years are typically bigger seasons for pink salmon because of their two-year life cycles, and numbers are down for nearly every other region in the state this year. James Jackson, an area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, says it's the third largest pink salmon harvest on record for Kodiak so far.
If we catch a couple hundred thousand more pinks on the tail end of this fishery, it'll be the second largest pink salmon harvest ever for the Kodiak area.
That's in spite of the fact that some areas were closed earlier this month after a fishing tender spilled thousands of gallons of fuel near the Katoy Bay hatchery on Afognak Island to the north of Kodiak. But Jackson says other areas nearby were open and the fuel was cleaned up or dispersed within days.
We didn't allow fishermen to fish while monitoring the fuel oil spill there, and it seems to have all cleared out, and we were able to continue to harvest the fish so that we didn't lose a lot of opportunity on those hatchery fish.
Kodiak's sockeye season has been more mixed, though. Harvest for the species is slightly up from last year, according to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, but is significantly lower than estimated harvest in both 2023 and 2022. The Iyukuluk River near the southern end of Kodiak Island had its highest escapement counts in at least the last 10 years. Jackson says over 400,000 sockeye came through the weir before it was pulled in mid-August. But the area was closed early in the season, in part to allow more Chinook upriver amid record low returns in recent years.
With the early king salmon restrictions, we, you know, likely exceeded our escapement goal down there and missed out on a lot of opportunity to harvest fish down there.
Despite the protections for kings, Jackson says king counts were still near record lows in both the Iyukuluk and Karluk rivers. The species has had remarkably low numbers across the entire state, leading to fishing restrictions and closures in other regions too.
Even despite having the more than month-long closure on the west side for conserving king salmon, we still came in near record low king salmon escapement to both Karluk and Iyukuluk.
Only 93 Chinook made it past the Karluk weir this year as of Monday, 17 more fish than the record low last year. Jackson says sockeye and the other three nearby rivers on the southern side of the island, also major sockeye runs in the archipelago, also had lower returns.
Like early run was weak. You know, Fraser was weak, and Upper Station early run was, I'd classify it as weak.
Sockeye escapement counts on all three rivers were below the 10-year average for this time of year, according to Monday weir counts. Early data is pointing towards big numbers for silver salmon so far around Kodiak, but there are still a few weeks left in the season. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Vanois.
And our final story for this week, commercial fishing reopened near the Kodiak Archipelago's largest salmon hatchery after a fishing boat spilled over 3,000 gallons of diesel in the area earlier this month. As KMXT's Brian Venwell reports, most of the oil was either picked up or dissipated within about a week.
The Katoy Bay hatchery is the largest one in the Kodiak Archipelago, with targets to release more than 200 million salmon each year. On Labor Day, the 112-foot tender, Sea Urn, grounded just a few miles from the hatchery and spilled up to 3,500 gallons of diesel nearby. The state's Department of Fish and Game closed the area to fishing and reopened it that same week, but it wasn't the first damaged boat there.
This present fuel spill came on the heels of another vessel that sank a few days prior and also leaked a small amount of fuel.
That's Tina Fairbanks, the executive director for the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association, which runs the hatchery. She says the first, smaller spill meant hatchery workers were already monitoring for oil when the Sea Urn grounded.
The hatchery staff was poised to respond very rapidly and already had a plan in mind. And so that gave them an opportunity to be at less of a scramble.
She says the team there tried to seal themselves in with two rings of protected boom, a sort of floating barrier to keep contaminated water from reaching the facility. Some fuel got through, so staff ultimately set up a third ring. She says crews used sorbent pads to collect oil that pooled near the hatchery's boat dock and estimated less than 2 gallons made its way through.
The fuel that did get inside Inner Katoy Bay did not ultimately threaten our broodstock or our infrastructure in any way.
Outside the hatchery's protective circles, nearly all of the oil in the area has either been collected or dissipated. That's why the fishery has reopened. Sea Urn's Insurance dispatched an oil spill response boat, which has also since returned to Kodiak. Anna Carey is an environmental program manager for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. She says diesel is lighter and tends to evaporate quicker than other fuels too, and that the department will continue to monitor for any long-term impacts.
We'll definitely be watching this area for a while, making sure that there's no additional cleanup actions needed.
She says the Sea Urn has since been brought to Kodiak for repairs.
The salvage vessel towed it most of the way to Kodiak, and then it did finish the voyage under its own power. They put a patch on the bow where the damage was before they transited, and that transit plan was approved by the Coast Guard.
Fairbanks with the hatchery says they got lucky this time around. The 3,000 plus gallons was only about a quarter of the fuel on the damaged tender, and the hatchery's months away from its release schedule. Staff also haven't noticed any significant die-offs from fish they're harvesting eggs from.
They've been watching those very closely, and we are perhaps hyper-vigilant about that. We haven't seen any more mortality than we would expect for this time of year.
Fairbanks says the crew there hasn't reported any significant die-offs from the spill. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Fenwa.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm Davis Hovey. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in.